I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jane Yun. Jane is a leadership strategist to Fortune 500 companies. A trusted coach to organizations, her expertise in cross-cultural effectiveness comes from 24 years of experience in high-stakes business environments. She helps organizations leverage diverse teams to drive competitive value and collaboration. She has held management posts at JP Morgan, Deloitte, and Resources Global. A graduate of Cornell University with a degree in economics, Jane is an advisor to the Center for Talent Innovation, American Heart Association Diversity Council, and Operation Exodus. Jane appears on media such as CNN, CNBC, Wall Street Journal, HBS Working Knowledge, Forbes, and NPR to discuss culture and leadership. She's the author of the bestseller, Breaking the Bamboo Ceiling, and co-author of Flex, the new playbook for managing across differences. Jane, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Hi, David. Great to be here with you.
So I know you have a lot of expertise in cultural fluency. How can cultural fluency help an organization smash the plateau?
Well, let's start with the basics. I think culture is often defined as a combination of visible and invisible differences. And often we're not always aware of the invisible ones. And I believe that to lead with this kind of cultural fluency starts with defining what it means to you and why it might be relevant to the most important part of your business. So very simply, when you are leading and you're effective at leading with cultural fluency, you're able to navigate a variety of mindsets and approaches and thinking styles and can also adapt your style and behaviors in such a way that connects most effectively with people from different backgrounds. So it's really the opposite of having kind of this rigid my way or the highway approach and willingness to adjust when needed in situations. And so I think many of your listeners and people in small and large organizations alike can probably think of a variety of situations that are high stakes where cultural fluency is desperately needed. And I can tell you from working with different organizations that it's quite varied, right? It could go from as simple as when you're trying to build and manage your team to grow what you're doing, to an external need, which might be negotiating a business deal with people from different backgrounds or cultures. Really kind of runs the gamut. I don't know if you want me to perhaps talk about some of the principles and some of the what I believe are important for when you have to lead with cultural fluency.
Yeah, before you go into the principles, maybe you could give one example of a common mistake that somebody who's in a leadership role might make with regard to the cultural differences that he or she confronts.
Yeah, I think leaders often when they bring a team together. So let's talk about a project task force that's coming together for an organization. Often people are thrown together from various backgrounds, representing different functions and maybe even geographic differences because you want to get people from different offices to weigh in on an issue. Often those teams are put together without a deep understanding of how those differences may play out on a team and how it may impact decision-making and how people resolve through that conflict. And I think an often common problem is people assume that that others are going to resolve those issues like they would. And so this concept that, the way I might resolve a conflict is just to kind of bring it up, right? And may miss the fact that people may have some concern about openly discussing that in a business meeting or a public conference call. And so people might have different approaches or indirect approaches and preferences for how to do that. And so I think that's a common one. And if you have a more direct approach, you may miss that. You may believe that your approach should be working, and when it's not, and when someone seems disengaged, not know exactly how to go about that.
Yeah, I've seen that one a lot, where you have a team, particularly on a conference call, when they're not geographically in the same place. So they use a conference call to get everybody together, and there's a problem, and the leader brings up the issue, and then there's silence. nobody wants to talk about it. Or maybe one person talks about it, nobody else talks about it.
That's right. That's right. And you don't know for what reason they could be being quiet, but there could be a lot of different reasons behind it. There could be cultural reasons. There could be certainly style or personality. There could be a lot of other reasons that are hidden that you might not understand. Often people just kind of walk through that and say, oh, okay, well, nobody has an issue, right? but I think it's important to really explore and determine if there is an issue or conflict that needs to be resolved by engaging around that.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the principles behind this.
So I think the first principle for leading with cultural fluency is really deeply understanding that leading with this kind of fluency requires an intentional effort, an ability to self-reflect in situations, and then practice, right? So by definitions, when you're dealing with people who are different from you, it requires that you're not going to get it the first time around, right? You're not going to always know exactly how to proceed. And so going in with this attitude that this is something that you need to work on, and that as you go into new situations, that you're going to learn from these situations and that you're going to need to adapt it, is the first step. Instead of thinking, you know, I either have it or I don't, right? It's a perspective that you can learn and that you're willing to gain this new skill. And if you think about it, David, you know, we don't learn this skill, right, in our schools. Many of us don't get schooled in knowing how to have a global mindset and how to develop that in our skill sets. And so we're kind of often graduating from school and thrown into our first jobs, and we have to figure it out, usually by making mistakes or by getting a bad review that we're not sensitive in the way that we deal with things. So it's something that we need to kind of put an intentional commitment to.
Right. Yeah, I certainly didn't learn this in school.
Yeah, no, I certainly didn't either. I think it was, you know, I was born in another country and I had to figure out how to adapt by kind of being thrown into it, but it wasn't something that was taught. So the next principle, I believe, which is also very important as a next step, once you kind of determine that this is something you're going to work on, is it's not enough to be in the midst of a multicultural environment that makes you a global thinker and an adapter. I think many of us believe that, let's say here, we live in New York, right? So because we live in such a cosmopolitan, diverse city and are surrounded by people from a variety of ethnic and cultural perspectives, or maybe that we've hired a very diverse and multicultural teams and we celebrate these different holidays, that makes you a leader who can manage across those differences. And it's not. How the leader or business owner manages and bridges across differences is really important. And that leader has the ability to really make that difference in the day-to-day management of his team by recognizing differences and knowing how to manage them and engage with them. And then the third one, which is related to that second point, is, you know, we engage others who are different from us by engaging and bridging cultural differences and similarities, not avoiding them. And it requires, I would say, a sense of courage and a commitment to building relationships, and not just in what we say, but in how we do that. And if you do make a mistake, and you will, I believe me, if you're working across differences, you will not be perfect the first time around. Be ready to admit that and learn what you need to do to improve.
Yeah, I'm hearing a theme about being open to learning how to adjust and deal with cultural differences.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I'll give you an example. So, you know, I come from, I was born and raised in South Korea, and I've lived here in the U.S. for a number of years now. But let's say you are going to meet someone from Korea in a business setting. You know, when you meet someone from another country for the first time, you're not going to know upon first meeting whether that person is, you know, one, new to doing business in the U.S. and has very little experience, right, or knowledge about how to do that. You're not going to know if that person is Korean-American and maybe fully bicultural and bilingual. And you're certainly not going to know, you know, how much that person identifies even with his or her Korean identity or speak the language. So it's only by engaging with someone finding out more from that person in that business interaction that you get to know that person. And so I think really holding on to our assumptions before you engage is important, and being careful not to judge and make those assumptions too early, and being open to how that relationship develops over time.
Right. So are there other principles that you wanted to mention?
I think that those are the kind of the basic ones that I would say. I would say one thing that I would encourage everyone on your show, and this includes people who are business owners as well as people who work in large companies, is to before you have any kind of a dialogue or give feedback or talk to someone about difference, I think it's really important to think about questions to ask yourself. And I'm going to give you those three questions. And they are, one, to kind of really ask yourself, what are they thinking, right? When you see something that you don't understand, or an action that you've observed in a meeting or a conference call that you'd like to further understand, you know, really ask yourself, what are they thinking? And do some homework about that. You know, two, how will you connect? You know, how will you break the ice, you know, with that individual, if you do engage around that difference? And then three, how will you put yourself in that person's shoes and demonstrate an empathy when you open your mouth to actually engage and either give feedback or engage in some sort of a dialogue to learn more about the difference and have that questioning attitude. So I think it's important to, in addition to these principles I shared generally, to think about what can you do for yourself to be more mindful before you respond and think about engaging around that.
Yeah, how do you tell what somebody else is thinking?
Well, you don't know. So I think you could do homework, right? You can, if you know that that person comes from a certain background and you have that knowledge before you meet them, usually you could find that out beforehand, right? Especially if you know who that person is going into that. There's a lot of information you could look at on the internet. You can read about it. There are books about this topic in other places. You know, you can ask individuals, right? There are people who have interacted with that individual before or know people from that background before. So there's no reason really to not go into that with more information and with more research that you might have done before you engage.
Right. And what are some of the options for connecting? Because you said understanding how you'll connect is an important question to ask yourself.
Well, I think it's thinking about how to not be judgmental. So imagine if you have a team member that didn't speak up on that conference call and you need to give that person feedback. You know, it's very easy when we're coming in with kind of that aggressive, you know, that person should have been talking, should have been engaging mindset, that you're going in there with the attitude of, hey, why didn't you do that, right? And assume that that person will understand that. So the how will I connect part is, how will I make this observation about that situation in the most non-judgmental way? So being curious, right? So one of the traits of the fluent leader that we found when I was doing research for Flex was really having that attitude of curiosity and learning. And so finding out how you can adopt that attitude. When you ask yourself this question, you're automatically going to build that attitude when you think about that, and you're more mindful about how to connect.
So are there techniques that a leader should use in a situation where cultural fluency is important to spend time being curious, learning, connecting, and demonstrating empathy?
You know, I think it's kind of both in the attitude and the actions that you demonstrate, right? And so as much as it is enough to have the attitude that you want to be engaging around difference, you know, it's in your behaviors also, right? And so when you are creating task forces or teams, are you doing things to widen the pool of people that you are inviting to the table? Before you make a decision, are you asking not just people that you normally ask on your team and in other departments, but are you broadening that perspective to others so that you are getting as inclusive a conversation as possible versus kind of always the way that you've always done it? Because if you continue to do things the way you've always done it and you're missing some voices at the table, you're probably going to make a decision that is probably similar to how you've made it, right? Versus really inclusive of all the perspectives of different cultures, different generational perspectives, and even from men and women around the table. So I think it's important to, if you want to be culturally fluent and practice that inclusivity, that you practice engaging around those differences and kind of questioning your assumptions, right, each day.
Yeah. Jane, are there some good examples of organizations that have done a fabulous job of learning how to be culturally fluent and what the results have been?
Well, there's a lot of organizations that are on the journey of it, right? And so, you know, many companies have begun the journey, and I think there are departments that have done this. And I think I can kind of share with you one example. In the book Flex, we talk about an organization called Memorial Hermann Southwest. And what they did was they really did a lot of reflection around how do they begin to build this hospital in such a way that they really are serving the patients around their neighborhood. And they realized they really had some gaps in the way that they could have served the surrounding communities of Asians that lived in the neighborhood. So there were large groups of Vietnamese and Chinese patients that were being underserved in the community, and as well as a senior care wing that they needed to build. And so they spent some time really getting feedback and doing surveys of former patients and physicians and community members to see what were some of the gaps that was needed, and took the time to really be thoughtful about what changes they needed to make in their process. And the result was that they hired people who had bilingual capabilities. They had begun to serve foods that were more catered to the communities that they needed to serve better. And it really overall improved the patient care that they got to serve. And so as a result, feedback was really great. And in the following years, surrounding some of the differences they had there, they were able to make the changes there. You could read more about that in the book about connecting with customers and community members.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear more about how the changes that they made impacted patient care.
Yeah, I think they had different strategies they used around that. So I think, for example, I think in serving some of the Asian communities, they realized that because of some of their religious beliefs, they needed, if someone had passed away, they didn't want the body to be moved immediately, right? So they wanted to be sensitive to those types of things and not assume that they're going to go about their regular process if they're going to respect that tradition. And so with that and other ways that they served the patients and their family members, they were able to make those adjustments.
Yeah, that's actually a really great example.
Absolutely.
Means that particularly big organizations often get the process that they have set up for the way they work is an important part of being able to grow and scale and be a big organization. On the other hand, some steps in that process, like what you just described, when a patient passes away, what happens with the body, might require a change in their process that if they're not sensitive to the cultural issues, they may be unwilling to change.
Right, right. And certainly it may seem like an inefficient way, right? Because you kind of have a process in place and, why do you want to change that? Because it's costly, it's a lot of work, it's inefficient in so many ways. You have to really understand, what's going on there. And although it may take time and may take a deeper understanding of why it needs to be changed and what really needs to be adjusted, I think in the long run it will do a lot of good. In both retaining patients as well as letting people know that you are willing to do that and are being respectful of the different communities that you're serving.
Yeah. Is there something that company leadership should do with regard to keeping the company's mission in mind as they're reviewing how they do things and how the culture they're trying to serve might be impacted by the way they work?
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to just have a mission. I think often organizations or people in organizations lose sight of what their mission is and what the values are. And so I think if, on a yearly or regular basis, they're able to reaffirm or underline or underscore the importance of the core key values that your organization stands for, then you can kind of say, well, this is the kind of messaging that we want to have for everybody that deals with our company, whether it's our employees who are hired to do this work for us, or the customers that we're trying to serve that we want to treat with this kind of value, right? And so I think it begins with defining what it is and verbalizing in various ways in your messaging what is it that you want to get across. And once you know what that is, then you could start to think about, are people from different cultural communities and generations, are they getting that, right? Are they truly getting that? And I would imagine that if there's a disconnect there, that's what you want to address in that area. You can't fix every single issue, and you can't go after every single value under the sun, right? But you have to define what your organization is going to stand for and what you want to be to the world and to the public. And if there's a disconnect there, I think, you know, customers are going to figure that out pretty quickly, and your employees will too.
Yeah, that's very true. And as we know, change is not easy. Change in big organizations in particular takes a certain certain expertise to be able to manage. And one of the things that people who are in leadership roles need to be aware of is the fears and frustration that people undergoing change feel.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah, change is really difficult. And it's a process, too, isn't it? It's not, you know, it doesn't start with the CEO saying, this is what I want to change. And then the next day it's done. It's really an ongoing process. And I can share with you a little bit maybe about how to think about the process of becoming a culturally fluent leader. So in addition to the principles, it certainly begins with seeing and understanding cultural differences, right? And so that's the start, right? That's the beginning of realizing, wow, there may be some really important differences that are relevant to my business and relevant to the kind of way that I want to do work and how I treat my employees that that we want to understand. So that's the start. And then at some point, once you move past that stage, you want to be able to bridge what the relevant cultural differences are, right? And so how do you engage around these differences, the most relevant ones that are important to us, so that we will have a successful business and that we're growing and that we'll have the best people and we're also trying to retain the best people. And then from there, you can begin to think about how do you integrate and leverage, you know, cultural differences in such a way that it will be good for your business, for both your profitability and also for bringing in employees that that you want to grow the business as well. And then that cycle continues, right? Because as you do that, as soon as you do that, you're going to see and understand new differences and cultural elements that you haven't noticed before. And as an individual developing this, you're going to continue to grow this cultural fluency in your own style and in the way that you look at the world.
Right. So I think that's actually an interesting point, that this is not something that we do once and then it's done.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's I think the most culturally fluent leaders I speak with, people who we've assessed to be really effective at navigating across difference and recognizing it, you know, they're the first to say, you know, the more I engage around differences, and these are people who have gone around the world, right, and done business around the world and have been really effective at working across all these differences for many, many years in a variety of countries and a lot of different mindsets. And they tell me, you know, the more I learn about differences, the more I understand that I have more to learn and that there's growth here even to be had at that point.
Yeah. Jane, what kinds of trends do you see going on in business in general? You know, there may have been a time when, if you weren't a global organization, understanding and responding to cultural differences may not have been as important as it is today. What kinds of trends are you seeing going on in the business world, whether you're dealing with whether you're a global company or you're a local company?
Yeah, you know, I think that you're absolutely right. I think in the past, you know, if I look at when I worked in the corporate world 20 years ago, the only people who got any kind of cultural training or awareness around how to work with people who are from other cultures were people who went abroad, right? Expats who were sent by their companies on these assignments for 2 years to 5 years. And obviously they were going to a whole nother place. And so they were given these packages, relocation assignments that prepared them to do this. I think now what I'm seeing is that you don't have to be going abroad, right, to understand and navigate across cultural differences. In fact, this whole idea of domestic, understanding domestic cultural fluency for me has been a really critical need. And so with organizations merging with organizations outside of the U.S., right, multinationals that are doing business across borders. And I think you mentioned, you know, we're doing business virtually so much now, right, having calls and meetings and meetups that are not always, you know, face-to-face. There's a need to understand difference beyond just kind of cross-border transactions. And certainly when you are doing acquisitions and divestitures of organizations that are outside of the borders, that's certainly a given. But I think the trends here is that we need to understand people who are different from us. And if you think about millennials, I think it's something like close to 36 or 37% of millennials are multicultural. And so this is your workforce, right? And if more than a third of your workforce is multicultural, you know, they're going to come from various viewpoints. They're going to have different motivations. They're going to have a different set of work styles. It's a tremendous need, and there's a sense of urgency that everyone who does business needs to understand, not just understand, but have the skills in navigating those differences.
Yeah, that's really powerful. That's really powerful. Yeah, it's really fascinating. So, Jane, what do we have to look forward to from you in the near future? I know you've been doing this work for a long time, and you've become quite an expert in cultural fluency. What's coming up in the near future for Jane?
You know, I am continuously working with organizations to build this skill in a variety of venues. I work a lot mostly with large companies, but I also work with smaller organizations that are trying to grow and develop this, as well as some nonprofits that are really looking to build this capability as well. I would say the next thing is really to continue doing research and practice around this and really start to see in the coming years leaders who have developed the skill over time. And so people are welcome to check out my books. I've written two books, Breaking the Bamboo Ceiling, as well as Flex, the new playbook for managing across differences. Both are available on Amazon, as well as any of the local booksellers. I'm on Twitter. If people want to follow me, it's at Jane Hyun, J-A-N-E-H-Y-U-N. And my website is www.hyunassociates.com, HyunAssociates.com. So you're welcome to visit, connect with me, and I'm happy to meet with many of you.
That's great. Well, Jane, this has been a fascinating discussion about cross-cultural effectiveness, and in particular, we talked a lot about how to leverage diverse teams and what the business environment is like, both globally and locally, where it's really important to understand our cultural differences and how to be more effective as a culturally fluent leader to drive competitive value and collaboration. So thanks so much for taking the time to come on Smashing the Plateau today and talk about all these concepts.
Yeah, it was great to be here and great to talk to you too, David. Thank you.
My guest today has been Jane Hyun, founder and president of Hyun & Associates. Thank you again, Jane, for joining us.
Thanks so much, David. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.